The Friday edition of the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS. Max is out with the flu today. Josh is here running the equipment, and Tim is in the traffic center, and I'm going to take care of some showbiz stuff here today. I just played for you my 2014 interview with Molly Bloom, the woman who ran these high-stakes underground poker games for some very well-known celebrity players in Los Angeles and then later on in New York. Tobey Maguire, who we talked about, was a real jerk at the tables. Ben Affleck played. Leonardo DiCaprio played. At a certain point, I think A-Rod was in the room. A billionaire banker named Andy Beal was in there. It wasn't all movie stars. There were some just regular, really, really rich guys who wanted to get in there. And in the interview, towards the end, I joked with Molly about, you know, is this book going to be made into a movie? And now it has. It's just like the book, called Molly's Game, and it's written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, and it stars Jessica Chastain as Molly, and it opens today here in St. Louis and around the rest of the country. Now, I am a big fan of Aaron Sorkin's writing. I mean, even as far back as Sports Night, which was his TV show before The West Wing, and then his other movies like The Social Network and Moneyball and on and on and on. I like the rhythm of his writing. It reminds me a lot of David Mamet. There are similarities there because they have the great rhythm and the great intelligence in their writing. Although Sorkin does tend to give his characters too many speeches to do, he's very, very good. And his script for Molly's Game sizzles with that same kind of dialogue, particularly between Jessica Chastain and Idris Elba, who plays the attorney that she needs once the FBI comes down on her for operating illegal gambling operations. The two leads in this movie are both great, as is the supporting cast, which includes Michael Cera and Chris O'Dowd, Bill Camp, Brian D'Arcy James, Graham Greene, Justin Kirk. You would recognize their faces if you don't know their names as soon as you see them in the movie. Now, unlike Molly's book, the movie does not name names. You never hear the names Tobey Maguire, Ben Affleck, Leonardo DiCaprio, Andy Beal, not once. Michael Cera plays a character who's just called Player X, and that is clearly Tobey Maguire, who was the biggest winner in Molly's Games, as well as the star that drew other guys to the rich table. People wanted to play poker with Spider-Man. And Maguire was ruthless with his opponents and with Molly as well, and made unbelievable demands, which I'm not going to give away. But suffice it to say that he comes off in the book and the movie and my interview with Molly as just an absolutely greedy jerk. The biggest problem with Molly's Game, the movie, is that it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long. That is too long, and it doesn't have to be. Aaron Sorkin has a prelude in this movie that goes on for quite a while about how Molly's Olympic skiing hopes came crashing down, literally, and there are several scenes about her relationship with her father, who's played by Kevin Costner, and neither of those storylines has anything to do with her life as the poker princess, as the tabloids called her. Maybe Aaron Sorkin didn't trust that as the core of the story, but he should have, because the rest of it is merely about a half hour of distraction from that core story. And he also messes with the timeline of the story. In the movie, Molly's book came out before her troubles with the FBI, but in real life, it was the opposite. She was charged in 2013, and the book came out in 2014 after she'd actually been sentenced. On the other hand, I will say that Sorkin gets most of the poker elements right, particularly in explaining to non-poker playing viewers what's going on during some of the hands and how better players can terrorize worse players and how horrific it is to be the victim of a really bad beat. You do not have to be a poker player or know anything about poker to watch this movie and enjoy it. You will absolutely be able to understand what's going on. Now, I do have a couple of other little nitpicky things about this movie, but that is the sort of stuff that comes from an experienced poker player watching this. I had the same problem with one scene in The Sting. I even wrote a column about how The Sting gets its poker wrong. And by the way, the same thing that was done in The Sting is also done in this one scene in Molly's Game. But that's me just nitpicking, and I know that. So I will tell you that Molly's Game deserves a place on the list of very good poker movies. You get The Cincinnati Kid, Rounders, A Big Hand for the Little Lady, Mississippi Grind, which I'm only mentioning because I'm in it, and because I will mention it every time I have the opportunity to mention it. Molly's game is good. It's not as good as I think it should have been. And I think you got to give both the credit and the blame to Aaron Sorkin for his rookie directorial effort here. On a scale of 10, I'm giving it an 8. Now, for my poker-playing friends, it might be a little bit lower. For non-poker players, I think it actually might be a little bit higher. And that's because of Jessica Chastain, who was so good a couple of years ago in a movie called Miss Sloane, and is really, really good as Molly Bloom in this movie. And Idris Elba, coming off a bomb of a movie that he did with Kate Winslet called The Mountain Between Us. Oh, that was a terrible movie last year. He's such a good actor. He needs a successful movie. I hope that Molly's Game is good for both of them. I know Jessica Chastain is nominated for a Golden Globe this Sunday night. I don't think she's going to win it, but I think she's going to get a lot of people's attention. And Aaron Sorkin's writing is right up there, crackling good. So too long, but pretty good. 8 out of 10 I give to Molly's Game. I'll take a break and come back with more showbiz stuff for you, including David Letterman's new Netflix show, the success of a Will Smith Netflix project that I thought was going to be a bomb, but Max said, no, it won't, and lots more coming up here on the Big 550 KTRS. Continuing along with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS, I am Paul Harris. Max is not here to do a movie review, but the only real opening this weekend is Molly's Game, which I just told you I gave an 8 out of 10. The Golden Globes are going to be on NBC this Sunday night. This is an award show that doesn't really mean much of anything because it's decided by, I think it's 52 members of the Hollywood foreign press community. It's not a thing that's voted on by your peers like the Academy Awards or the SAG Awards or anything like that. But Hollywood loves to play it up because A, it's a party, and B, it's enormously publicity ready to go out there and say, winner of 8 Golden Globes, or nominated for 12 Golden Globes, or whatever it is. Seth Meyers is going to be the host, and although he has done a ton of Trump stuff on his late night show on NBC, I think there'll be some of that on the Golden Globes, but even more will be directed towards the Me Too movement. In fact, all of the actresses who are nominated for the movie and TV categories have agreed to wear black dresses to the Globes this year because they're trying to make a statement amongst them that the Me Too movement means something and they're going to try to get more and more people's attention. Interesting that there's going to be a guy in charge of the whole thing who will be hosting it, and we'll see what he has to say, and we'll also see what some of the presenters and some of the winners have to say once they get up there. I know if Reese Witherspoon has something to say, she'll be able to do it if Big Little Lies were to win for one of the TV categories.
Don't they normally have, like, a Golden Globes lady who walks everybody up, and it's always somebody's kid?
Yes.
Yes. Like Billy Joel's daughter will do it.
No, not Billy Joel, but it's like Melanie Griffith's daughter or somebody like that. I don't know if they're going to plan on having men do it this year or if it's going to be a man and a woman. I know in the past sometimes they've had a guy and a woman, both 11,000 times more attractive than any human being you've ever met.
Right.
Because they're the offspring of beautiful people. But yes, they will be there, absolutely. And we'll see what the impact of the Me Too movement will be on this and what the speeches are like. Interestingly, while the Golden Globes don't mean much as far as prestige in Hollywood, the Oscar nominations are open today. Voting begins today. And I just hope that some of the people who vote for Oscars will remember a movie that came out last spring called The Big Sick, which, if you were listening to this show last week when I did my 10 best movies of the year, was in the number one spot with a 10 out of 10 rating, the perfect comedy from last year. Unfortunately, I think it's being forgotten by too many, and the Oscars are terrible with their history when it comes to comedies, but The Big Sick absolutely deserves that attention. David Letterman has announced his new Netflix series. He's actually been taping it over the course of the last couple of months, and it'll debut 1 week from today on the service, and they're not putting it all out there like they always do, every episode at the same time. The show is going to be called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction with David Letterman. Interesting he has to introduce himself in the title. His guests on the first episode will be former President Barack Obama. And then he's going through George Clooney and Malala and Jay-Z and Tina Fey and Howard Stern. Six episodes, some of them with an audience, some of them without an audience, each of them about an hour long, and maybe some field segments where he goes out and does, I don't know, is he going to drop watermelons off a tower again? I don't think so, but it'll be interesting to see him on there. And the answer to your question is, yes, he still has the stupid beard.
Well, you don't like the beard?
No. As a closely cropped beard wearer for my entire adulthood, that long... When ZZ Top says, dude, trim it back,
yeah,
that's when you know you have too much facial hair. Speaking of Netflix, about a month ago on this show, Max and I were talking about a Netflix movie called Bright, because a listener had emailed and said, I understand that this movie cost $90 million to make, and it's not going to be in any theaters, so how is it going to make money if it's just streaming on Netflix? And Max's answer was, well, it depends on how much Netflix paid for it and whether it brings more people to the service. But then we talked about how the movie was getting absolutely horrible reviews from everybody who has seen it. Well, that turned out not exactly to be true, because apparently some people liked it, non-professional people who saw this movie. According to Nielsen, 11 million Netflix users have streamed it in its first few days of release, and it is currently the number one movie on Netflix in over 190 countries, being streamed more by international users than domestic users. So that makes it a hit as far as Netflix is concerned. And by the way, Netflix doesn't confirm or deny any of this information. They never release viewership numbers. But here's all you need to know about whether Netflix is happy with the $90 million they spent. Today, they okayed a sequel to Bright. So at least we know Will Smith will be able to make the mortgage payment.
Yeah, they just raised my Netflix prices.
Yeah, they went up a buck.
Yeah.
Because they're spending so much on original programming. I think the guy who's in charge of it, Ted Sarandos, said instead of $3 billion, we're going to spend $4 billion on original programming in 2018. And you, my friend, and I, and everybody else who has Netflix, we're paying for it.
Yeah.
I've not seen the Netflix thing, the Will Smith thing. Have you?
No, I don't really intend to.
Yeah, neither do I.
It looks like, what was that movie, the TV show?
Alien Nation.
It looks like Alien Nation.
With James Caan and Mandy Patinkin.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. Although, in this case, it's not an alien. It's some mythical creature like, you know, elves and dwarves and that sort
of thing. Unicorn.
And I'm not into that kind of fantasy stuff. The Amazing Race, a show that I am really into, started its 30th season on Wednesday night. My wife and I, who have seen every episode of The Amazing Race, were glued to our DVR. We didn't watch it Wednesday night. We actually watched it Thursday night and loved it. And we were not alone. 7.3 million people watched this show. It got the highest ratings of the night. That's interesting, because it looked like CBS was trying to squeeze The Amazing Race out of its schedule after first putting it on. It used to be on Sunday nights, and it got a great lead-in from 60 Minutes in Football. And then they moved it to Fridays, and it just didn't do well there. And then they moved it to Thursdays at 9 o'clock, which was not a good slot for a reality show like that. This time they put it on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and it got gigantic ratings for them, almost twice what they had with the premiere of the show last year. And also, that's the Survivor time slot, Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. Now the show's going to go forward and continue to be on in the Wednesday evening prime time slot, but I think it's going to be on from 8 to 10. They're going to do two episodes a week and kind of burn through the season. I hope that doesn't mean they're burning Amazing Race off of the grid, because I'm a big fan and I would like to see some more of that going forward. What else do I want to mention here? Oh, I'm a fan of this Marcus Lemonis show on CNBC. Called The Prophet. You ever watch this, Josh?
No, I see commercials, though.
He is a very rich guy who invests in small businesses, usually small family businesses. And there are small businesses that are kind of in trouble. They're basically just barely keeping their head above water. And he goes in and looks around and meets the people and then actually writes them a check and buys whatever percentage of the company he's going to, 30%, 40%, 50%. And the deal is, if he writes the check and gives it to them, no matter how much of the percentage of the company he has, he's 100% in charge. Because he knows how to run successful businesses. And he'll go in and say, okay, instead of selling 100 different pairs of socks. We're now going to sell five. What are your five best-selling pairs of socks? That's what we're going to sell from now on. We're not going to sell, you know, just jeans. We're also going to add in jackets or bags or, you know, whatever it is that he gets into. If it's a candy company, he makes them only get concentrated on what works, because small business people sometimes can get way, way off the rails. And he goes in and he turns these things around, not all the time, but most of the time. The times he has the most trouble are when there's some family member. And in every episode, there's a family member who you could see in the first segment. That's the trouble. The brother-in-law who's on the payroll and he's helping out, but he's really just a knucklehead and he doesn't actually do anything. Or the father who's charging his daughter too much rent for the warehouse space. He's renting to his own child and she won't say anything and he's a jerk. And so Marcus Lemonis has to work his way through all that social stuff. However, Marcus has, in the last year or so, started doing some almost documentary-like shows that get away from his regular format. And in the last 2 weeks, he has done two fantastic shows. The first one, which aired a week and a half ago, was about the situation in Puerto Rico. After Hurricane Maria and the other hurricanes that had devastated that island, he went down there and wanted to look around and see what the devastation was, and not just in San Jose, but in other parts of the island, particularly parts up in the hills, where they still don't have electricity, and they have been told by the government they may not have it until July. These are people who by then will have had no electricity, which means no fresh water, for 9 months. And as he points out, these are American citizens. Puerto Ricans are American citizens. If this tragedy were going on the mainland, the government would be all over it. There would be military troops down there. Now, there are National Guards people who are down there who are helping out and who are doing their best. But considering that Puerto Rico is only 100 miles by 35 miles, that kind of devastation needs an enormous amount of help. And the trouble, of course, is getting it across an ocean into the sea, the Caribbean, to Puerto Rico. But we have planes that can land at that airport and personnel who could go there. And when people don't have enough fresh water to drink and electricity to keep a light on or to do anything, that's taken them back to primitive times. And Lemonis actually says things like that on that show and really shows what it is. He also goes with these amazing doctors and nurses who in some cases travel up a mountain 4 to 5 hours to help out a mother who's got a sick infant, and then 4 or 5 hours back down. You know, he'll say to them, you worked 12 hours today. How many patients did you see? 3. But if those people hadn't gone there, that kid dies. That old woman who has breathing problems, she dies. And so these are the real heroes of the Puerto Rico situation, and it was so great for him to point that out. Then this week, he did another one called The Prophet in Marijuana Country. It was timed because California just became the largest recreational marijuana market in the world when it became legal on Monday, New Year's Day. And he went to Humboldt County, California, and talked to people who have actually been growing pot out there for 50 years, even when it was illegal. And the hassles they get from the sheriffs, and every time a helicopter flies overhead, they think this is the time we're going to prison. In fact, this couple that had been growing it for 50 years, Mark has interviewed their kids who are now grown. And he said, what was it like when you were young and, you know, your parents could be arrested at any time? He said, both the boy and the girl, the man and the woman, there were times when we would be coming home from school and the school bus would be dropping us off at the bottom of the hill and sheriff's cars would be coming down the hill the other way. And we'd think to ourselves, are mom and dad going to jail? Are those cars full of my parents and their weed? Oh, it was absolutely heartbreaking. But there's also the black market side of this story. I mean, he gets into the whole thing. If you are interested in these stories that I'm telling you, which he told so well as any reporter, I mean, he's a real, real curious guy, curious about so many things. If you want to see these, go to the CNBC website. I don't think they have the entire episodes up, but you can see clips from them in 2 or 3 minute segments, and it's absolutely fascinating. And the last thing I want to mention here is that if you are a fan of Game of Thrones, you will not be getting any new episodes this year. They have postponed the 8th season of Game of Thrones to 2019. So that's next year that you will finally get the final six episodes of the entire series of Game of Thrones. And that's the showbiz stuff for this week. Coming up next hour, the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads of the News, all on the Big 550 KTRS.